It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, today I want to talk about why I recently realized you should have a pet. I was thinking about my own pets and what I like about them. And I often think about my relationship with my pets because it's weird. I mean, it's not, I think a lot of people, but like, there's a weird, they're kind of family, but we also don't treat them the same because they're not humans. Although some of us do, and some of us like it better. And like, what I like about them, and all that. And I realized that a very big thing for me, I think, might also apply to you. A lot of the positive interactions one can have with another human are possible with a pet. However, a whole lot of the aspects of interacting with humans that cause me anxiety and or stress are not present with a pet. So, imagine, if you will, a person that will hang out with you, maybe even likes you. I know how you are with physical things, but like, I assume if you're alone with your wife and she wants to cuddle, you don't have a problem with that. So I assume a cute enough dog or cat wants to lay on you and pet it, you would probably be okay with that. But if you're not, there are plenty of non-cuddleable pets. But you can talk to them, and sometimes they talk to you, and you can hang out, and you get a sense of not being alone. But things like, am I talking too much? Am I boring them? Are they understanding what I'm saying and not misinterpreting what I'm going to say? Am I accidentally offending their beliefs? Are they bothered but not going to say anything because they're too polite? None of this comes up with my fucking cat. And I was thinking about how, like, it's not the same as a person, and it's the relationship is on a different scale. But so many things that can make human interaction awkward, or just the things that you have to sort of keep track of, don't exist. And I was like, I know one person who has a lot of those tendencies worse than me.
That's an interesting.
Seriously, though, I mean, it's a funny bit, but I think it's real. Like, because I realized that a lot, it's a lot. It's not all. My pets cannot replace people. That's the whole thing, because it's not a social interaction in the same way. But it has a lot of the benefits of social interaction and doesn't have a lot of the negatives that you and I particularly can experience with social interaction.
That's interesting.
You might think about it. Has your wife ever had pets?
I think so. I did have a pet frog for a while, I think, while we were podcasting. I would talk about my pet frog. Yeah.
I don't think I remember this frog.
And it was very early because I think I remember talking about it. Hy-Vee was selling plants in large transparent vases, and there were frogs, little frogs in there. Remember that? Maybe you don't.
No, not at all.
We didn't think that was very cool. We thought that was pretty awful, actually. But so we, you know, rescued a couple of these
liberated
frogs.
Liberated one of them, yes.
And they were in a aquarium in the room there, and I took care of them. I fed them and stuff. And then there was a time where one of them got sick, and I had to figure out why it was sick, and I had to get some medicine to put in the water and everything. You know, they both eventually died. And it's kind of like a fish thing, right? They're not going to last very long.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I enjoyed having that little frog. I didn't go get another one. They weren't selling them by then, or I might have. I might have gone ahead and liberated some more.
Well, and that's...
But I don't know.
That whole thing is always a very tricky deal for me, because everybody has a different vibe of how quickly do you get new pets and under what circumstances. I have friends and loved ones who, like, the week the pet dies, they get new pets because they know that will help ease the grief if there is a new something. And in fact, I have taken this, I've seen this taken to an extreme where I have talked with young people about their dog, and I found out that their dog died because I hadn't seen the dog in a while. And they tell me when, and one of the kids was like, yeah, because that's the day we all got to go pick out pet hamsters. So like literally the day the dog died, they got new pets so the kids wouldn't feel as bad. Meanwhile, Trish and I like can't even think about it for like 6 months afterward. It's just like there's combinations of it feels like an active replacement. It in some ways for the first few months, we still feel like they're here in some ways. That kind of thing. And then it's usually once you're in the sort of right headspace, you got to wait for sort of inspiration to happen. You got to find an animal that you fall in love with, which is mostly what happens when my wife fucking shops Craigslist for damn cats found on the side of the road. And that's how we end up freaking pet.
Well, I grew up with dogs and cats, not in the outside house. Yeah.
Did you play with them much or pet them or any all of that time business?
All the time.
Well, there all you the go. Then you I understand. Was, I don't, I was don't know very, why you don't got pets.
I was very sad when, you know, certain ones passed away. It's very sad. I think through that experience, I fancied myself more of a cat person than a dog person. I think because... I don't know. I perceived more and more interesting personality, you know, differences and traits in cats than like the dogs I knew were, they were different from one another, but they were more similar than different. And yeah, you could pretty much rely on a very specific kind of thing from just about any dog. The cats I knew were very different from one another. Absolutely. Like completely different. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy how different they were. Like we had cats that seemed as friendly and for lack of a better term, needy as a dog would answer to its name or whatever. Very dog-like, but plenty of cats that were not that. Some cats that were the exact opposite. So it was, I just found cats more interesting, behaviorally interesting than dogs. But I liked dogs fine. We had dogs that I interacted with and spent time with and, you know, played fetch with and stuff, all that.
Yeah.
I was growing up.
I think for us, it really is about commitment. We love dogs. We love cats. I guess in my head, I'm more of a cat person, but I don't know that I could tell you why. And it might be a vaguely aesthetic thing. But mostly just, it takes a lot more effort and activity to have a dog. And it's not activity that we want. Like, you got to take it on walks. For most of them, there's a certain amount of exercise that's really crucial. There's a lot of stuff they can't do on their own. You can't leave the house for more than a few hours because they can't pee inside and things like that. And it's just more work. Whereas cats are like a roommate that doesn't pay any rent.
And poops in a box
because they don't give a fuck and the guy throws it out for them. I haven't watched that video in a while. I should watch that again. Holy Christ, it's a piece of paper. This is a good video. Although, the internet has now been around long enough, and YouTube has been around long enough, that sometimes I watch these videos, and then I see how old the video is, and I'm like, oh yeah, that cat's dead.
Yeah.
Well, hello, everyone! Yeah. Welcome to the Magical Talking Cat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's probably talking about dead cats, right? I mean, that's not good SEO or whatever. Like, that's not how you should make a podcast. No, talking about dead cats. It's terrible. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 649.
Sorry, what were you going to say about dead cats?
I was going to say, I think it's an interesting thing that when you read anything or watch anything that talks about what would happen if humans disappeared from the earth, they point out that vast numbers of dogs would die within a couple weeks, but cats would.
Tons of species and everything. I'm tempted not to say this because I've definitely done it 4 or 5 or 12 times on the podcast over the years, but there is an old, the webcomic Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal has one that is a 2-panel comic. And the first panel is a wolf on the edge of the tree line and a like a caveman showing up, and he's like, come with me, mighty beast, and we shall travel together as companions and make our way in the world. And you shall be by my side. And then the second panel is somebody dressed in more sort of medieval clothes, and they're in a grain silo, and there's a cat in there, and he says, have you been killing off the rats that have been trying to eat my grain? And the cat says, I don't think that's any of your business. And it's domestication of dogs, domestication of cats. And I'm like, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cogent arguments about how cats domesticated us rather than the other way around.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah.
But yeah, dogs are the ones who will eat until they die. Dogs are the ones you can't, like, I used to be able to put like 4 days worth of cat food out and leave for 4 days. And I'm not saying they rationed it real well, but they did okay. If you did that with the dog would stop.
Well, dogs are also the ones we've bred to a point where many of them would be no good out in the wild.
Yep.
A lot of cats.
I count my blessings. The cat breeding is way less of a thing than dog breeding.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a thing, but less of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, dogs differ I suppose it depends, but it seems like there's so much more variety in size and in basically all kinds of criteria. And cats, there are differences, but not so dramatic differences. And most of them could still hunt if they needed to. Most of them.
Yeah, most of them. Some of them are kind of fucked up because they've done some weird shit with cats. And also, sometimes you get a wild mutt of a cat who is still fucked up because as Addie's whole breathing apparatus is just a disaster. Mm. He snores with his eyes open and is a whole... But other than making funny noises, he seems to do fine. All right. For those of you just joining us, we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Every once in a while, a kind passerby will write an email to that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Pretty much whatever they like, often questions or topics for us, but whatever. And the hat magically forwards it to us, and we read them and we talk about them. Not complicated, people. So how has your week and 9 days been?
Just school, basically. We finished watching the original Justified that was started in 2010 or whatever.
So now you've got City Primeval or whatever.
Yeah, we started watching a couple of those. It's a very different show. So it's going to take a little while to sort of ease into it.
Yeah.
In the first show, which was went from like 2010 to 2015 or something like that, by the end, he has a kid, a little girl. So in this one, he's got a teenage daughter who's played by Oliphant's actual teenage daughter.
Nice.
That's kind of interesting.
There was the Willow series on Disney that's already canceled and I think maybe already taken off Disney for some reason. His character, because Willow plays Willow, like Warwick Davis plays the same character and he's older, and his daughter is in it. He had two little kids in the original movie. And there's a grown one of them. I think the son died. I don't know. The son doesn't show up, and I can't remember if he died or what. The wife's also dead by this point. But his daughter, and she's doing a really good job. And I'm like, it can't be the same kid. It can't, like, literally, the amount of time that's passed in story and the amount of time that's passed between movies are very different. But I'm like, I'm going to look it up. And I look it up, and I tell Trish, I'm like, well, it's not the same girl who played Willow's daughter in the movie. It is, however, literally Warwick Davis's daughter.
Same with this. Was a little girl, obviously, who played the daughter, you know, 15 years ago, not the same person, not his actual daughter, but now it is. Yeah.
Also, fun fact, within Willow, there is a point, Val Kilmer is not in Willow because Val Kilmer is very old and sick and doesn't have a voice anymore, I believe. Assuming I don't think he's dead yet, but he had throat cancer. He can't speak. But in the movie, you hear his voice. And it's not lines from the original movie. And it sounds just like him. You're like, what the hell? His son. They got his son.
Really?
And he sounds very much like him. Yeah. This is interesting. This is like the upside of nepotism in the film industry, I think. We get some neat things like this.
But let's see. Other than that, I'm trying to think of big movies we watched that I have forgotten we watched. But I can't think of any. I think we've just mostly been watching Justified so we could see what the new show looked like, and we'll watch it. The guy who played the Corinthian in Sandman, Boyd something or other, he's in it, which he's very good, so that's cool. But it's so far not is I mean Walton Goggins does such a just a mind-blowing job in that series. He's just so good. I mean, it's ridiculous how good he is. I mean, you end up watching the show as much for him as for Oliphant's character or whatever. And it's just so good. So, I mean, the original series is quite well written, has some great scenes in it. Sometimes they do what TV shows do and they have, you know how in pitch meetings, the writer often says something and the producer says why and the writer says so the film can happen.
Yeah.
In TV it's often something happens, the producer says why, and the answer is so this scene can happen, you know, we want to see these two people together, or we want this action scene or whatever. That does happen sometimes in the show, but not as much as in others. Mostly the writing is pretty top-notch and the acting is through the roof. I don't know if it's, you know, for everybody, but I would think that if a person likes to see really good performances and if they're fans of either Goggins or Oliphant, I think it's worth watching because it's just really, really good.
You know, Goggins had a very short-lived, maybe not short-lived, I think it got at least two seasons, comedy called The Unicorn. Mm-mm. And he's the lead. And the premise is he's like widowed. And he's like an attractive single father with a job. And like, that's the mythical unicorn for like divorced women out there. And it's the whole thing of him sort of trying to cope with that. But it's just like, it's Walton Goggins, not in like crazy makeup or with an insane accent or something, which like never happens. He never just gets to play like a dude.
See, I've seen him, and I remember when he first showed up in Justified, and I remember thinking, oh, yeah, it's that Walton Goggins guy who I've seen in things, but I didn't remember ever being super impressed or anything. Not like I was in this show, So maybe I've only seen him in like bit parts or something.
It took a while for him to become a big deal. He had a very slow rise in his career.
Maybe that's yeah.
And I think he did sort of get typecast to start with. He's a certain look that I think put him with a lot of sort of just villains and stuff, but often not like top tier villain, like he would be the lieutenant or whatever. But no, it is funny we're talking about this, because genuinely last night I said out loud to my wife, Walton Goggins is an absolute treasure and none of us appreciate him enough. Because last night we were finishing third season of The Righteous Gemstones, and Walton Goggins plays a regular character on The Righteous Gemstones by the name of Uncle Baby Billy. And it's a hell of a character. Like, it is something. And so it's a heck of a fun time watching him.
He's from Alabama. So like when he does a Southern draw, like he does in Justified, I think he comes pretty honest.
I think he normally does, but then every once in a while, most of the roles he's put in, they very clearly are like, could you notch that draw up real high?
Well, also in Justified, he's one of those, the way they write him, he's one of those sort of verbose Southern gentleman types, but you don't mind because everything he says just sounds cool. it just sounds really good. And you'd be happy just to sit there, just let him talk, because it's like, wow, this, because it's sometimes when people are like that, you know, they're boorish or they're not very good at it, but the character they wrote for him was like, yeah, I could just sit here and listen to that guy talk all day.
He's never not entertaining.
And there are sometimes in the show, there's a couple times through the seasons that he gets to sort of give a speech, like he's talking to a group of people, and he kind of does the old Southern minister routine. He's good
at it. Uncle Baby Billy.
Oh, is that what he does with this? He's really good at it.
Well, I mean, everybody's a preacher on Righteous Gemstones, but yeah, he's specifically Uncle Baby Billy is the brother of the dead matriarch of the family, who was, he and his sister were a hot ticket sort of revival thing when he was younger. And now she went on to marry a guy and open this giant mega church. And he sort of faded into obscurity. So he sort of crawls back into their lives in the first season. And then he's there every season because he's fucking amazing. And it's like, but like, that's the thing. His name is Billy, but he always went by Baby Billy. And so there's a big thing that all of his nieces and nephews have to call him Uncle Baby Billy. Like, specifically. because that's his show name or whatever. And he's one of those who's like all about being successful in sort of show business, and that becomes a thing. And he's very absolute fake tan, like just amazing silver fox wig, real big old fake teeth, like the whole picture, frequently wearing some version of a sequined leisure suit.
Are they fake? Because he's got some prominent teeth. I mean, he does.
I think these ones are fake because they are more prominent. If not, then he is holding his jaw in a way he doesn't normally hold it, which is possible.
Another cool thing about the show is, you know, some stories do a really good job of creating a good protagonist and antagonist relationship, right? Like, you just love to see them both on screen talking to each other, and you don't know what's going to happen. And yeah, they did a good job with this. Marshall Raylan Givens, played by Oliphant, and Boyd Crowder, played by Goggins. I mean, they both do such a great job. And then anytime in the show, they're in the same place together and they're sort of verbally going back and forth. Just fantastic. It's one of the great rivalries, I think, in TV entertainment. Truly, it was so good.
I heard that about the two major characters in the Hannibal series. Also had that vibe. The one that's for me, and this dates me horribly and very, very 90s of me, but the TV show Forever Night, in which Geraint Wyndavies plays a vampire who doesn't want to be a vampire anymore, And so he does a lot of things to try and sort of cure it, not have to deal with his weaknesses. But meanwhile, he's a homicide detective in Toronto, because again, the 90s. So it was all police procedural, but also there's fucking vampires. Mm. And one of the big things is his sire, played by Nigel Bennett, who he hasn't seen in like a couple of centuries or whatever, comes back into town and is an antagonistic force. He's not always directly the villain, but sometimes he is, and there's a lot of pressure, and he has this very smug thing of thinking that his progeny is barking up the wrong tree. Like, you won't be able to cure this, and why would you want to, and all that thing. And I don't want to spoil the end of the series, because it also has one of the most incredible series finales ever.
Hmm.
But their relationship, because they are antagonists on the opposite side of the moral line here, but also have known each other for hundreds of years. And that's a thing. And it, like, there are times where they talk about how they are friends, even though they are enemies and sometimes try and kill each other and things like that. Well, they handled that really well.
In this show, these two used to be friends. They used to work together in the mines. So did the vampires. And so that's part of it, that they grew up together and they knew each other and they worked together. But also part of it is you don't always root for Raylan. You're not always rooting for him, right? Because he's a marshal, U.S. Marshal, deputy marshal.
ACAP. And
what?
ACAP. All cops are bastards.
Well, that's the sentiment that I think sometimes you're kind of supposed to feel based on some things he's doing.
Some kind of times I do feel it.
Yeah. So
thank God every day Timothy Oliphant's not actually a cop.
Because there are a lot of police organizations, and the U.S. Marshals are one of them, that can confiscate property, like all of your, like your house and your car and all this stuff, and hold it, even if you haven't been formally arraigned or you've not been found guilty of a crime, they can just take it. And that's a thing that, you know, it's a pretty, not entirely realistic, but a pretty realistic portrayal of how the U.S. Marshal Service works. And sometimes they do things that I don't think the writers even intend for the audience to think is okay. So you never, it's not a good versus evil thing by any stretch. It's these two guys are pretty much the same guy, but this one carries a badge and this one doesn't. And it's, I think if you're paying any attention to the show at all, you would be forced to wonder, how does this guy carrying a badge make him better? Because sometimes it makes him worse.
So I know you only saw that way. Original series, but do they end up together?
Well,
like,
not the way I think you mean. But
no, I would be super in. I would watch several seasons of the worst show imaginable if I knew that Walton Goggins and Tiffany Oliphant making out was coming near the end there. I go a long distance for that.
I thought it was really, really interesting and well worth watching. But so for some people, stuff that's based on crime and people killing each other and nobody's really the good guy. I mean, you've often talked about, you don't like shows where nobody's good. I mean, it's not quite like that, because, well, I don't know. I think a lot of the characters, even the ones that are not that you won't like what they're doing as criminals, or you won't like what they're doing as police, you still can relate to them personally, and feel sorry for them, you know, when they're struggling with things, and understand the motives of them doing something that's bad, even though you know it's wrong or whatever. I think there's a lot of that in there, but you know, it's not for everybody. But I thought it was well worth watching for the performances and for that really good relationship between the protagonist and the antagonist, which sometimes you weren't sure which one was which. It's kind of interesting. What?
This just turned into a Timothy Oliphant Walton Goggins fan cast. You've spent the better part of a half hour talking about
it. I know, because I thought we finished the first season. I'm just telling you that I thought it was really good, and I recommend it.
Clearly, that's what I'm saying. This is how we base things. This is like with my wife. When my wife is starting a new show on her own, or most commonly with a new game she'll play on like her devices, if I ask her early on and she's like, I'm not so sure, I know that doesn't necessarily mean she doesn't like it. It's how much time she spends talking about it, whether it's good or bad, is directly related to how much she actually is enjoying it.
More complicated than that.
Very similar with you. You seldom will go on at length about something that you aren't really into.
Right. But there's another part of it when I'm talking to you, and that is I feel so bad sometimes if you watch something based on my recommendation and you hate it or don't like it or whatever. I feel really awful. Facebook
has left you scars. I remember.
Not just that especially, but not just that. And so it's like, gosh, what do I say?
I don't feel bad that you don't feel bad about Bates Motel. But I will say I'm not traumatized by it. I find it hilarious because I'm just like, how was your vision so narrow on a specific aspect that you didn't remember? Oh, wait, literally this entire show is just festooned with things Tony hates really bad.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's hard, like you just said, that Tony hates really bad. Well, right. But you watch horror. I mean, you watch certain things.
I do.
And sometimes you can even tolerate certain things. So I guess I wasn't sure where the line was, is what it comes down to.
Well, and you were also very focused on the initial rape, which wasn't great, but also wasn't the end.
No, you're right. I was very focused on that to the extent that I almost thought, well, if you can get past that, you can get past everything else.
No, and I think that's the thing. And I got past it. I'm like, oh, we're fine. No, wait, no. People trapped in basements, sex trafficking.
Sorry. I know.
Lots of beating. No.
That was just the beginning of all of it. So I don't know what I was thinking. I
cracked myself up just the other day. Something reminded me of when I asked you if Michelle Rodriguez dies in the Dungeons and Dragons movie. And it tickled me. Because you couldn't answer at the time. And I know why now, because I've seen it. But we won't talk about it.
Okay.
But it did amuse me. It did amuse me. And it feels weirdly deliberate on their part. But whatever. Sean Bean was unavailable. I suppose we're technically not watching any TV shows at the moment. We went through a lot of them very, very quickly. We have finally finished season 3 of Righteous Gemstones, and they do know how to do a send off. I really was pleased with the last couple episodes. I do wonder if I might not come back though, because I don't know. I just think I've rung. It's starting to feel the same. And it's a Danny McBride joint, so I'm caught between the parts I find really funny and the parts that I find really gross or unfunny or things like that. And I'm like, I've gotten the shtick, and it was good, and I'm glad I watched it 3 seasons. That might be enough, though. So we'll see. But so we're done with that. I decided I'm done with Station 11. I don't know if I got to the part that Jazz got to, but given that Jazz said there was a specific thing, I might have literally gotten to that part. Because there was definitely a thing last time we saw it. But it's that deal again where I was just like, I do kind of want to know what happens, even though I feel like they're probably not going to resolve it well. But it sounds like a chore to watch the rest. Yeah, I'm going to look it up and see how it ends, but I'm like, I'm dreading it. It'd be 5 hours that I have to put up with. And I'm like, yeah, no, this is optional. So I bailed on that. So then Trish picked Hijack on Apple TV Plus. 6 episode series. Idris Elba is a super cool dude on a plane as it's being hijacked. And it's sort of a 24 thing. I don't think it's exactly that, but like it's 6 roughly hour-long episodes for a flight that is like 6.5 hours or something. So it corresponds, and the whole thing's going to happen on this plane. And so we watched the first episode, and I immediately bailed on that as well. There was nothing wrong with that episode. It just set up a lot of the characters and things in a way that I'm like, this is going to be a bummer. Like, I don't know exactly how the plot is going to go, but I know the characters they've created here, and I know how the tone of the show is going to go. And it's going to be a lot of shitty people doing shitty things.
I've been waiting for you to talk about the last season of Ted Lasso. Have you not watched it yet?
Yes, I know. I'm super dragging my feet. I do need to get to it. I might do it this next week. But by get to it, I mean I'm going to rewatch the first two seasons on my own before we watch the third. Okay. The internet has bled through enough that I know a lot of folks were unhappy with the end of season three. I don't know any specifics, but I do know that some people feel like it didn't stick the landing, and so I'm real nervous to get in there. And again, we know how much Ted Lasso meant to me. That kind of shit is very much in a place and time. Like, I'm partially worried that going back and watching the first two seasons won't affect me as it did. So I've really been nervous about it, but I do need to get to it because I'm never not going to see it. So, but we'll see. But yeah, so we're open right now. Technically, we both need to pick two. I think Trish is going to go with Good Omens season two because that's all done. But I don't know what I'm going to pick. All right, let's see. Oh! I got movies to talk about. I got a lot of movies to talk about, but okay. I may not have time because I have to talk about something else. You ever been to a Catholic funeral?
Yes.
Like a full one, like with mass and shit like that.
Yeah. I'm not remembering everything about it, but yes, I have. For sure. I have.
Whew. They are a lot.
Well, they can be. Yeah.
I've never been to one. But I'm also on record as having been to church services like six times in my life. None of them Catholic. But this one, Catholic. It's very physically tiring because you got to stand up and sit down a lot. Or kneel. You can also kneel. But I did it, and I was in my first ever funeral procession. By the way, I should specify it. I had to attend a funeral on Wednesday for my wife's mom's sister's husband, who was very old and had been dealing with cancer for many years. So if I sound flippant or whatever, I knew the guy. I didn't dislike the guy. Perfectly nice. I was happy to go to his funeral. I am not bereaved particularly. So I am looking at this much more as a spectacle than a thing. But I had never been in a funeral procession, and I did that now. And the gravesite dedication or whatever, I'd never had done one of those. I was not looking forward to that, but it was surprising fast. And then we went for fellowship at the Peoria Country Club, and holy crap. I thought I had been to some nice country clubs when I was younger, cause I knew rich people, but I was not comfortable in there. It had some of the best food I've had in ages. They had a buffet spread that was to die for, but like...
To die for? Really? Did you just say that?
Oh, I did. I apologize. Dick would have thought that was funny.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
But like, all the staff and only the staff were not white. And they all kept calling me boss.
Calling you boss?
Yes. Just if I needed anything. Like, hey, boss, you want another Diet Coke? Or can you point me to the bathroom? Sure thing, boss. I'll lead you this way. And it just, I'm like, it wasn't even like a I shouldn't be there. It's like a this shouldn't be. And, oh, and the big thing. I buried the lead. I wore pants.
Yeah, you.
I bought pants.
You bought them, yeah, I knew that.
For this.
Yeah.
Hated it. Literally, after the country club, I went out to the car and changed into this very captain.
So, did you like being called boss just a little bit?
I don't necessarily dislike being called boss in general.
Okay.
Being called boss while I was a guest repeatedly at the very white and staffed by very non-white country club.
Okay, so when you went, one of the things you said about going on a cruise was that it was nice to sort of have that experience of, you know, you didn't have to worry about anything and people were waiting on you and all that. Did anything about that bother you in a similar vein? Or was it just the context of so much whiteness versus so much non-whiteness and all
there
that?
Is, because that there is some of that going on a cruise stuff. I mean, there's that in any economically upscale situation for me. I have that at certain restaurants I go to. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Maybe some of it had to do with Peoria or what. I was just incredibly aware. Like the room we were in had these giant bay windows looking on a view of Peoria that I didn't know existed. And I've spent a lot of time in that city, but I didn't know there was a view this good. Because there's just a valley of trees and everything below. And don't get me wrong, we hung out for quite a while. Caught up, there was an old cousin that visited and Trish got to see a lot of people, a lot of family she hadn't seen in a while. Whatever. Talking about this because afterwards we were kind of wiped. So we went home and we watched Renfield.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I want to be clear about this. A lot of people are going to tell you that I got high to watch Renfield. It's not true. Large number of famous, politically powerful people, some of which have come out of retirement just to make the statement that I was high while watching this movie. A lot of very trustworthy people with a proven track record of honest public service literally like appeared out of nowhere just to have a press conference to say Tony was high while he watched this movie. It's not true. Just want that clear. Didn't happen. Despite what many more reliable sources will tell you, it's not what happened.
Okay.
So, we saw Renfield. I asked Trish afterwards what she thought of it, and she said it was fine. I agree. However, my explanation for how I achieved fine is a bit more verbose. Renfield was written by three people. Two of whom have their most prominent credit of being writers on Rick and Morty. And one of whom is Robert the Walking Dead Kirkman. This is one of the worst scripts I've ever seen in a film. It was really terrible.
Yeah, it was not good. I didn't think.
However, the performances across the board with, again, the terrible dialogue they had to work with were so well done. And so everybody was trying. That's the thing that shocks me. Everyone, even Nicolas Cage, was trying. And I think the performance elevated it to fine, particularly if you're high, which I wasn't. But if you were, it's a little bit better. Like, it's not Love and Thunder bad, but it's imminently skippable. And it also really confirmed for me that there was an LA party one night, some coke was passed around, and somebody was like, you know what we should make? A present day movie where Nick Cage is Dracula. And that's it. I am 100% convinced this movie was because somebody was like, what if Nick Cage played Dracula? And then they built a movie around that. Also, one of the main characters is Awkwafina, and none of the trailers really made that clear.
You know, now that you mention it, you're right.
Major character.
That was kind of a surprise.
She showed up in places, but she's like the female lead.
Yeah, you're right about that. I didn't think about how that was kind of a surprise.
But everyone involved was trying their damnedest, and I think they really made it into mediocre. Because, and that is an accomplishment, because that script was garbage on just a variety of levels. It was gross. It was narcissistic. It was very later. It's Rick and Morty around the time I decided to stop watching Rick and Morty, combined with a soupçon of The Walking Dead around the time I stopped watching Walking Dead, which was after the first season. And it feels like a very wasted opportunity. You might have said something I didn't hear, because your face suddenly moved from this to this. Very sudden.
Yeah, same with you. I didn't hear what you've been saying for the last probably 45 seconds.
It's fine. I was saying that the movie reminded me of the point in Rick and Morty where I stopped watching, with a little bit of the point in Walking Dead where I also stopped watching. So it all makes sense. But yeah, not fun. But I do want to talk about some other movies that are good.
Okay.
One of which really surprised me. It's a movie I found on Tubi on accident called Resurrected. And this is weird because it doesn't have to be this. We can't really call this found footage, but this is a style that has been happening more since COVID. Of movies that are entirely filmed on a computer screen. Like the whole thing, it's mostly like FaceTime with people.
Yeah.
And Skype calls and things, but then also they'll go to websites and things like that.
I don't like these things.
I didn't at first. I'm getting into it and I see the possibility, and there are certain movies where I think that works really well. This movie did not have to have that. I don't think it necessarily hurts it, but there's nothing about it that it lends itself. But it's in the near future, the Catholic Church figures out how to resurrect people. And they also say, we're going to resurrect people, but only if you're a good Catholic and if we don't find out any terrible sins that you've committed. And the movie mostly takes place 5 years after this realization. And it's listed as a sci-fi, and it's listed as a horror, and it's also listed as a thriller or something. I don't consider it sci-fi or horror in particular. It is absolutely a conspiracy movie. It is a conspiracy thriller to the degree that, I guess, spoilers, we never find out how the resurrection stuff works. We never get an answer to that. I assume that's what we were building to. No, we were building to something else entirely. I don't know that it sticks the landing in that it didn't resolve things quite enough for me, but it resolved the immediate thing. You have a specific POV character that sort of resolved his arc. I don't know. I kind of was into it. What cracks me up, though, is the actor. Did you ever watch Parks and Recreation? Herd Happley was the local news anchor in Pawnee, Indiana, in Parks and Recreation.
Yes.
And his whole shtick, he has a very news anchor voice, but he also just uses too many words. So he'll be the thing like, and there's just one question to this, and that question is the one I'm going to ask now. And then he'd like ask the question and stuff. He gets jobs as news anchors in movies now. And he's in this one quite a bit, and it's not funny at all. And he does a perfectly good job, but I keep waiting for the purr to happily, because he sounds exactly the same. Like, the words are different, but the performance is just purr to happily.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of funny. But also, I can't remember, we were watching something else a few days later, and we were like, do we know this guy? And I looked him up, and I'm like, well, we don't, but I do. Because he was the lead in that movie I watched last night that I was telling you about. I can't remember what it was, but he showed up as like a two-bit villain or something. And I was like, what are the odds of that? But anyway, Resurrect, good movie. That's not the one That's not the big one, though. That one, that one's fun. You can skip it, but if you like a conspiracy movie, if you're like me and my wife and we really like Christian mythology, it's not that. It's not that. It's very much a conspiracy movie that happens to be about Catholicism. So keep that in mind. But it also, I found it really interesting because it really did, better than so many others, was like, what are the things, how would society change with this information? And like one of the first things is the Catholic Church starts employing the cherubim. And what that is they literally just pay people who were professional hackers to basically look at everybody's data when they die to see if they're pure enough. They have to report all their dirty secrets. And consequently, software developers start making things that can shield you from that, supposedly. And it's like part of the theming. They're like, you're protected now. You can search and sin in peace and stuff like that. And so there becomes like industries start existing that most movies would not bother to pay attention to. And it's very interesting. So yeah. But no, we finally watched They Cloned Tyrone on Netflix. Do we know about this?
I've heard of it. Haven't seen it.
You have an expression on your face when I say a movie I saw that is identical if you've never heard of it, or fucking seen it last night. So I'm always very hard pressed when I'm like, I saw this, and you're like, and I'm like, so you've never heard of it? It's like, no, I actually watched it last night. We loved it. Then why did your face say that? So anyway, all right. So you've heard of it. Yeah. It is a recent Netflix thing. John Boyega, Jamie Foxx, and a woman whose name I do not yet know, but she's the one who plays Monica Rambeau in the MCU. And they play a drug dealer, a pimp, and a prostitute, respectively. And it's another conspiracy kind of thing. Here's what I'm going to say. I think this movie has created a brand new subgenre. It, along with Sorry to Bother You, has created a new subgenre. And I'm having a hard time coming up with a good name for it. I want to call it elevated blaxploitation, but I don't think that gives enough credit. Trish wanted to just call it black sci-fi, and I'm like, no, this is much more specific. If you've not seen Sorry to Bother You, stop listening to the podcast. Go watch Sorry to Bother You. It's an unbelievable movie. It is incredible. It is crazy. Do not look up what it's about. Watch it. They Clone Tyrone is not Sorry to Bother You. But it's pretty good. And it's, again, pretty politically savvy in a way that I don't always expect from Netflix. It is not just a Netflix. You know, most of the movies that Netflix puts out these days are all the same mushy gruel to me. This stood out. I think it still got Netflix-ed. I think it might have been a little edgier if it hadn't been made by Netflix, but it's real good. And I just love John Boyega. His career choices have been tricky for me. He does a lot of movies that I think he's probably really good in, but I don't want to see. So anytime he's in a movie that kind of looks like something I'd want to watch, I'm very excited. And this very much, it's a different vibe, but for those of you who first met John Boyega in watching Attack the Block, another great movie you should watch if you haven't, and his breakout movie, it's really fun to see him do that. And then the others are really, Jamie Foxx is used just about right. Like, you can definitely overdo it with Jamie Foxx these days, but he's good in here. It's a good movie. I would recommend it.
So what?
It's on Netflix, so just whenever.
You were talking about Netflix having an impact on how something's produced. What impact do you think that is?
I think they work to make things the way they think the public wants them. The way I think there is a broadening impact of doing a movie with Netflix. If you're doing Netflix, you have to have a certain level of broad appeal that you don't always have to have.
So a little bit like Disney, except, I mean, Disney also has some other brand requirements, I suppose.
No, but this is a similar thing. Yeah. They are a big enough company with a wide enough audience that most of the time they're going to take, well, I mean, every business often takes the least risky route, but especially if you're Disney or you're Netflix, you want everything to be the way that will please the most people / piss off the fewest people. And you see it in other things. This is also a problem with, in general, the mainstream media overall. And it's why I like watching a lot of indie movies and playing a lot of indie games. I was just talking about the Barbie movie. Stop rubbing on the thing, or you're going to like kill the recording or something. Sorry, Ezzy's loving on the laptop. The Barbie movie was very good and is getting a lot of impact, and apparently a lot of women are breaking up with their boyfriends over the Barbie movie, which I'm loving. And it's a combination of things. It's a combination of, some of them are watching the Barbie movie and sort of having a realization, but some of them are also like, I want to go see the Barbie movie, let's all go. And their boyfriend is like, I want to go see the Barbie movie. And they fight and they fucking break up. She chooses the Barbie movie over him, which I'm like, good on you. But the strong feminist perspective of the movie gets heavily diluted by the end. And I'm not going to say the Barbie movie has poor messaging, but the message gets weakened as it goes through, and it definitely doesn't take any controversial stands.
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because in spite of people trying to really polarize the movie early on, my personal sampling of things online and people I know is maybe there's a slightly left preference for this film, but there's plenty of people who are like Trump supporters, even male Trump supporters, even, yeah, who have gone to see the film and think that's fine. I mean, all the people that are complaining about this are, it's overblown, it's fine.
And which tells me
like what you're saying is true, that they, something was, you know, the movie does something that, even though everybody who comes from it will admit that it's feminist, whatever they think that means, there are a lot of, like I said, people who are Trump supporters today who are not, yeah, offended by it, who don't think it's woke, who think that all the debate about it is overblown, which I think is why it could make $1 billion, because I don't think it was going to do that just based on people of one political persuasion going to it and liking it.
It is doing things that haven't been done before on this level in this mainstream. But yeah, here, let me give you the exact political barometer for this.
Okay.
If you are someone who does not believe in the patriarchy and that our modern society is patriarchal, if you are someone who does not believe that overall within our society, men have more power than women, if you don't believe that, you won't like this movie. If you are willing to accept that concept, doesn't matter what details you have. You could say like, it's a thing, but it only kind of like you, as long as you're willing to acknowledge the existence of patriarchy, just sort of the word.
Yeah.
You'll be fine with this movie.
Well, so and far,
there's definitely going to be a contingent of people who aren't, because it's the same people who are like, I'm not a feminist because I don't think women are better, or I'm not a feminist, I'm an equalist, because they don't understand what the word feminist means. There are people who will be like, yeah, patriarchy is made up bullshit. It's the same way, like if you made a movie that just mentioned climate change, most people would be fine with it, but there's definitely a non-insignificant contingent who would be like, yeah, you're trying to put politics on me. So yeah. If you know people who don't think the patriarchy is a real thing, they probably wouldn't like this movie and would kind of find it overly leftist. But outside of that,
I also get the impression that a lot of people who go to see it, who like it, regardless of what their political leanings are, think that the people who don't like it don't get the joke of it.
Right.
Right. Like, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, and I do look forward to seeing it. But, you know, when I heard about what the Barbie world was like in terms of, you know, all the Barbies have all the jobs and the Kens are all like beach Ken and whatever, to me, that just that was a sort of a brilliant reflection of what Barbie play really is like. I mean, all the girls I've ever known who play with Barbies, Barbie's the center of that world. And she does the thing she does is the center of that world. And Ken is not. So yeah. It's like, yes, this is what Barbie world would be like.
No, there's a just bunch like of, there's a bunch of stuff like that. It also is very open in talking about the less successful and more controversial, but still very real Barbies and things that have been put out.
But then to point out that, the real world is essentially the opposite of that, which it kind of is. I mean, I don't know. Like you said, most people can admit that men have been running things for a long time. And I mean, how can you look at Congress and the gender makeup of Congress and not realize that men are still running things? It's just how it is.
But people absolutely can and do.
Right. So the whole thing is an interesting, it's satire. It's farce, maybe a little bit. You're not supposed to take it super seriously. You can, if you want to or not, but there's no reason for anyone to feel offended by it necessarily. But like you said, a film that talks about climate change, most people are going to be okay with that. But there's a few people that are going to be angry that it was mentioned.
And this is tricky, this one, because I knew a lot of people, including people who I would say politically and socioeconomically are on par with me, of a similar vibe overall, who didn't want to see it and was shocked they were making it, because they're just like, it's just a kid's toy live action movie. And some of those people, they found out actually it's sort of, these people are like, I don't need to see a movie about Barbie dolls. I haven't played with Barbie dolls in decades, and or I'm a dude and I would never play with dolls. And then they find out actually it's a satire and it's actually poking holes. And then they're like, well, I don't want to watch a movie that tells me Barbies suck and that they're corrupting our youth or whatever. And so a lot of people have had two good reasons not to watch this movie by doing absolutely no research into it. So I guess I'm not terribly surprised, but it's good. Sorry, I got a little lost there, but it's good. And I think it's mainstream, and it has to be mainstream.
Right. That was kind of the point of the conversation, was it?
But it's very good, I think, for having conversation. It is a very thought-provoking movie, in my opinion.
It's become a...
And
I think you have to respect
it. We talk
it.
About the things we liked. We talk about the things we didn't like.
Right.
We talk about choices they made and what would it have been like if they did it this way.
Yeah.
Me and all my friends have talked a lot about that.
It's created a cultural moment. And when a movie can do that, I think it deserves to be paid attention to. You don't like... I don't know if I'm going to like it or not, but that's beside the point to me now. Right now, right. I'm interested in the cultural impact it's had. And, you know, some people make fun of the cultural stuff that's in it, but I don't know how you can deny that cultural stuff is making some kind of an impact. And what is that impact? And that interests me. And so far, it seems like a positive one, as far as I can tell. It doesn't look like a negative cultural impact. It looks like a very positive one. So I'm interested to see it. Don't know if I like it, but like I said, at this point, don't even care. I'm totally interested in the cultural import and impact of it, which so far looks
pretty good. I suspect you'll like it. It also is quite funny. It's a good just comedy.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. It's hilarious, I've heard.
But yeah, no, definitely. Well, when you guys see it, we got to talk about it. Although you and I will probably have to talk about it off the air. We didn't get to any email. We have an email, but we didn't get to it because we're over time, mostly because Mrs. William Goggins over there just really had a lot of stuff to get off his chest. I hope your wife hasn't heard any of that. I hope you can keep yourself more under control when you're watching the show. It's very rude. to just be so openly craving when your partner's right there. Anyway, but you should still write in because we need more emails. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com. Also, I talked about a lot of movies. You guys see any of them? Tell me what you thought. Also, do you want to fight William for who gets to marry Walton Goggins? Now, you think William's a very big, tough man. I don't stand a chance. But keep in mind, there will be only one competition, and the loser still gets to marry Tiffany Oliphant. So, kind of win-win. Just saying.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.